Hi, everyone. Ryan Dobson here. Do you want to know what the best decision my parents made on my behalf was? It was their decision to basically force me, that's right, at 17 years of age, to go to Summit Ministries for a two-week camp. The truths about God and the world that I learned at Summit went on to shape the rest of my life and has led me to where I am today. Well, I have some exciting news about how you can save a bunch of money on sending your son or daughter to Summit. Summit has agreed to offer a $200 discount to Family Talk listeners if they use the promo code FAMILY15. Again, $200 off by using the code FAMILY15. Don't wait, because this offer ends soon. Go to summit.org today. Again, summit.org to sign up your teenager today.
Today on Family Talk.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson with our host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And today we're going to wind back the clock and enjoy a classic program between my dad and Michael Reagan. Over the past 30 years, my dad has interviewed thousands of guests on many different topics. A lot of those broadcasts are full of evergreen content that is still relevant today, and this program is no exception. Statistics on sexual abuse in the United States are mind-blowing and just horrific. Our guest today on the program is a victim of this horrible maltreatment. Michael Reagan was sexually molested at a camp by a counselor at a very young age and suffered with the after effects for decades. It wasn't until years later that Reagan first shared his experience in a book he wrote about his journey to healing and redemption, titled On the Outside Looking In. Michael Reagan's story is the subject of today's program as we wind back the clock and enjoy a classic edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Michael Reagan is here with us, the eldest son of former President Ronald Reagan. He's been a friend of this ministry. He's written four books that I know about. There may be others. The Common Sense of an Uncommon Man, that dealt with Ronald Reagan's wit and wisdom and eternal optimism. Also, The City on a Hill, which was a phrase that his dad used, Michael Reagan, Making Waves, and On the Outside Looking In, which was a best-selling autobiography. Michael, it is really good to have you here.
It is great to be back with you. It's wonderful. Thank you.
You obviously enjoy radio, don't you?
I love it. I have fun. Somebody told me when I first got into radio, just always have fun. And I'm still having fun out there. How can you not have fun with all the things that go on? Even though sometimes you cry about what's going on, it's still fun covering it.
You told a story when you were here, Michael, and I'm going to ask you to repeat. I have shared it a time or two because it has such meaning. But you had said that your dad never hugged you and was not affectionate in that way, even though you knew you were loved, and then something happened.
I talk about this when I go out, too, and I talk to young kids about relationships, that so often that we hold people responsible for the way we feel. You know, I used to blame my dad. You never told me you loved me. You know, therefore, you know, I was angry that he could put his arms around a nation, seem to love a nation, love God, love a nation, but he never told me he loved me. And it made me very angry, made me jealous of the people of this country and what have you, that he could do that. And then one day, it really was almost like really God just grabbed me, you know, and just said, Michael, listen to me. I said, like what? Listen to you what? He said, when was the last time you told your dad you loved him? And I started to cry because I never had. I never told my dad I loved him. But yet I found myself blaming him for never telling me he loved me. So I took it upon myself. I said, the next time I see my dad, I'm going to tell him I love him and hug him.
You'd never hugged him before?
I never hugged him. So I said, I'm just going to grab him and hug him. Now he comes from that generation when a guy hugs a guy, you start asking questions.
Yeah.
But when I saw him, it was down in San Diego. I was doing my local show down there in early 90s. And I saw my dad, and I went up to him. I said, Dad, I just want to tell you I love you. And I gave him a hug. You know what he said?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I love you too.
Mm-hmm.
And it began like a brand new relationship. Yeah. So that every time I saw him, I would do this. And so as he got deeper and deeper into Alzheimer's and got to the point where he couldn't say my name, but he did recognize that I was the guy who hugged him. So that when I would walk through the door of his office or at the house, he was sitting down or standing, his arms would go open. And I would lean over, give him a hug, say, I love you, Dad. And he couldn't say I love you anymore, but by hugging me, he was telling me he loved me. And there came a day when Colleen and I were up at the house, and we left. And it was almost to the car. And Colleen said, honey, you forgot something. I said, what'd I forget? Turn around and look at the door. And I turned around, and there's my dad standing in the doorway with his arms open, waiting for the hug. And, of course, I went back and just gave him a big hug and said, I love you, Dad, and got in the car. And it was just like a whole change because I took it upon myself to say, you know something? You've got to take the steps to put this relationship together and quit blaming him. And when I did that, it's just like the whole world opened up.
Well, that's a message for a lot of people out there whose fathers came out of that generation who weren't able to express their love and their appreciation in that way. Maybe it starts with us. Maybe it starts with the younger generation.
It really does. I got a letter from a young man I spoke at a high school, Notre Dame High School, where my daughter graduated from, said, Dear Mr. Reagan, I just want to tell you thank you for your message about relationships the other day, and my parents wanted me to tell you that they love you. And the reason they wanted me to tell you that was, and then he went through the story, and he said he went home, and he started telling his parents he loved him. And they said, what's come over our son? And they asked him, what happened? He said, well, Mr. Reagan told us this story. And so they just want me to tell you they love you too. And thank you very much.
You know, it is really interesting that you didn't feel that kind of affection from your father because I loved him. You know, I didn't know him intimately, but I was in the White House a lot during the 80s when he was in the White House. And I've sat by him with the jelly beans in front of us and talking about the family and the family issues. And I really had a great affection for him, and I still do. And a lot of people all across this country love that man.
Listen, I've loved him from the day I walked into the building. I really have. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, he loved me. I mean, that's what it was all about. It was my own self-assurance.
But he was not expressive, you know. I don't think I ever remember him saying anything personal to me. That was not who he was, was it? He was a great communicator, but he did not deal with things on an emotional level like that. Or at least, he would cry when he'd tell a story.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It's just things he did as a person. I mean, down the Carolinas during the 1976 campaign, he's down campaigning. He's the governor of California. And there's a home for the blind that came over to see him, young kids, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old. And the headmaster of the school asked one of the operatives of the campaign if the kids could spend a few moments with my dad. And my dad overheard that and said, you know, instead of us doing it in public, let's go in the trailer and let's talk to him in the trailer because I don't want this to be on camera. This isn't where it belongs. So he goes into this trailer with these kids, five or six blind children, and he's talking to them. They're asking him questions, and he's answering the questions. And all of a sudden, it just comes over my dad like, these children cannot see me. They can only hear me where I can see them and hear them. So he gets up from his chair and he kneels down in the middle of the floor, doctor, and he invites these blind children to come over and lay hands on his face and to feel his face as he answers their questions. Do you know any other politician would even think about doing
that?
Just imagine these kids putting their hands on his face and asking him questions, governor, and him answering the questions.
Gary Bauer was on the president's staff. He was senior domestic policy advisor at that time. And he tells a marvelous story of being in a staff meeting with the president. I think it was a working lunch around the cabinet table. And you didn't speak to the president unless you had been given permission by the troika that really ran the White House at that time, Jim Baker and others. So Gary really didn't have the permission to speak. But at one point, he just felt he had to, and he made the president aware of this little Down syndrome baby in Bloomington, Indiana, I believe it was, who was being allowed to starve to death because he was not a perfect child. He had Down syndrome. And how the parents were willing to let him die. And the doctor said, if the parents don't want him to be fed, we're not going to feed him. And that baby was dying. And Gary Bauer told Ronald Reagan about that. And as he was as he was speaking, he saw these big tears fill up in his eyes and run down the president's face, the most powerful man in the world. And he turned to the staff and said, see if we can do something about that. And they did.
This is the man who reached out. Remember, he reached out and adopted me into the family.
Yeah.
And I thanked him for that on his 80th birthday. I said, you know, I want to thank you for something. Maybe I haven't done that, you know, for bringing me this family, giving me such a great name.
But it was a difficult childhood for you.
Yeah. It was difficult because, you know, looking at it through 5.5 and 6 and 7 year old eyes is different than looking at it through adult eyes. And because raised in that era, in that family, like most of us in Hollywood, we were sent out to boarding school. So at 5.5 years old, I was sent to boarding school.
Your mom and dad were big in Hollywood.
Mother was big.
Yeah.
I was Jane Wyman's kid before I was Ronald Reagan's kid.
Is that right?
I became Ronald Reagan's kid in the 1960s. Up until that, I was Wyman's kid. And by the way, I'm still Wyman's kid. We were all sent to boarding school. The Crosby kids, the Hope kids, and all of us went to boarding school. And so at 5.5 years old, I'd be dropped off at boarding school, and I'd come home every other weekend. And that was a terrible thing for me because I equate it to what's going on in America today. We drop our kids off at daycare centers. And what does a child see at 5.5? What I was seeing was very simple. I was seeing, you know, why doesn't my family want me? Why are other kids being picked up every day and gone home to eat dinner with their mothers and their dads and I'm not? And I just started to really feel bad about myself. I thought that there was something just inherently wrong with me. And I began to keep secrets from my parents and not talk to them because I felt you didn't want to talk to me. I'm not going to talk back. And you begin not to put together relationships. So what happens is that other people come into your life. And they're not always good people to come into your life. Every child needs affirmation. Every child needs affirmation. Male, female, it doesn't matter. We all need to be affirmed.
Sure.
And if the parents aren't there to affirm the child, somebody else is going to pick up the reins and affirm that child.
Nature abhors a vacuum. If the parents don't meet that need, somebody else will.
Well, I wanted to earn my way so much into the Reagan. I thought I had to earn my way in. I found out very early on I was teased at school as the bastard child of the Reagan family. I didn't know what that word meant. It just sounded terrible. I actually went home and got the Bible out at like 7. I get the Bible out of my mom's library, and I open up, and it takes me to Deuteronomy 23:2. It says, all illegitimate children of the 10th generation will not enter the kingdom of heaven. Now, as a 7-year-old, I don't know there's a New and Old Testament. I'm just reading the Bible. I closed the Bible. That was in 1952. I didn't reopen it again until 1979. So next time I open the Bible.
What a really unfortunate interpretation.
But you see, I didn't want to go to somebody and tell them what I read for fear that you would affirm my worst, worst fear. So I just believed it inherently. And I didn't talk to my parents about it because I didn't have the relationship to do that. Well, there was a day camp counselor who would pick us up after school when I began, I think it was 3rd grade. And would take us over to the park and learn how to throw footballs and baseballs and basketballs. And he taught me everything I know about sports, except for swimming. Dad taught me how to swim. And this man, after a short period of time, began the process of sexually molesting me. Every day on the way home from camp, he would drop me off last. And then ultimately—
And you didn't tell anybody?
Who do you tell? The word molestation, it wasn't even in the lexicon of my mind. And
Did you tell your sister?
No, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell anybody until 1987 when I wrote my first book.
The amazing thing is most kids don't tell.
Because we don't want you to tell us our worst fears. Our worst fears is we're bad, we're terrible, we've done something wrong.
And many of them have been threatened.
And you believe in your heart that what you're going to do is affirm to me that I am a terrible, rotten, cruel, despicable child.
And some of the kids are so hungry for love that they go along with it. Then they feel responsible for it for the rest of their life. You know, I didn't fight this. I went along with it.
You beat yourself up.
Yeah.
You beat yourself up inside because you don't know really what to do. You don't know who to go to. And what you deal with, and I will tell you as a child, is you deal with the fact because at that point in your life, doctor, you're also dealing with your sexuality.
Sure.
And so you don't know, am I heterosexual? Am I homosexual? Because a male has touched me. Are you going to believe, if I tell you that a male touched me, are you going to believe that I'm homosexual? So I'm not going to tell you because you may affirm that to me. Yeah. And I'm scared to death that you might do that. And that was one of the great fears I had in my life, that I'm sitting in the Reagan family. And when my dad ran for governor and for president, that this would come out. And people say, my gosh, he's got a son who's homosexual, and I'm not. but you don't know what the public is going to think of you. And this the man who sexually abused me ultimately took it to the next level. Because one afternoon, he decided we're going to go hiking up in the Santa Monica Mountains. And he takes all of us up to the Santa Monica Mountains, and he sends all the kids off on one trail, takes me off on another trail, and has me undressed and takes pictures of me.
Oh, goodness.
And about a week later, he asked my mom if he'd take me to dinner, drop me off at the house. Can I take Michael to dinner? Mom says, yeah, take him to dinner. He took me back to his apartment, and at his apartment, he had a dark room. I say dark room now. Back then, it was a magic room to me. And he had these pans of water, and he took a piece of paper out, and he took the piece of paper, and he put it in the pans, and a picture came up. And it was magic to this little eight-year-old boy. And he said, would you like to do this? And I said, I'd like to. And he put these tongs in my hand with the paper. And he took the tongs, and he moved my arm from one pan to another pan. The third pan, what came up was a nude picture of me. Uh-huh. And he put his hand on my shoulder, and he said, Michael, wouldn't your mother like to have a copy of this? It took me 6 years to get out of my mother's house, because at that point I knew if my mother saw it, she'd kick me out, and it would just affirm how bad I was. It took me 6 years to finally get out of my mom's house and move into my dad's house, and I began the process then of trying to prove to myself that, in fact, I was not homosexual, that people would not think of me as homosexual, and I began to steal money from my dad's wallet. You know what I did with that money? I just go down downtown L.A. and buy prostitutes. You know why?
To prove
to myself I wasn't homosexual. Yeah. Just say, will somebody hold me and love me and tell me I'm not homosexual? Because I don't want to share this one. But I can't. I'm Ronald Reagan's kid. I'm Jane Wyman's kid. I don't want to tell anybody because they're going to tell me maybe that I am. And it scared me to death. And my anger. I mean, I was so angry. I was so angry that I thought everything hated me. Everything was against me. I thought God hated me. I truly believed God hated me. When I go out and speak to kids, I start it off. I speak to men's group. How many here have ever believed God hated them? I believe God hated me. How many have ever hated God? I believe I hated God. And I used to sit back and tell God off. I would get so angry, and I'd tell God off. I'd tell Jesus off. You know why? Because if I was going to go to hell, and I believed I was going to go there, that I wanted to go there on my terms— I'd rather go there by telling you off, God, than go there for what I'm feeling inside, for what somebody did to me and how I feel about myself and how the world may feel about me later on. I was absolutely scared to death.
That still burns within you, doesn't it?
Every day.
You're not telling this story as though it were long ago. That was you.
Yeah.
And that you is still inside you.
It still is. It does not leave you. People say, well, why don't you tell? Tell who? Tell what? You are so afraid. You are so afraid of what people are going to think of you. And, boy, I remember the anger. I so angry. You know, one day my car wouldn't start. And I thought even the battery of the car hated me. I took a sledgehammer and destroyed the car. Just destroyed the car with a sledgehammer. Did the same thing to a bike. Just the anger. And what finally turned it around was I happened to get into my life a great woman, a Christian woman who came into my life who never knew about what happened to me as a child, but a woman who did something that maybe a lot of people were doing that I wasn't aware of, but I was aware of what she was doing. She prayed for me every single day. Colleen prayed for me every single day. And it still took 12 years from the time we got married to finally telling her what had happened in my life. But there's a woman who God sent her into my life, and she's the one that turned me and brought me to Christianity. And even though I can feel the abuse each and every day, you know, I can live with it now and release it because now it's on God's shoulders and it was on my shoulders for too many years.
I thank God for what he has done for you, and I thank God for her, for Colleen, because of what she did for you, because there's so many people out there that we hear from. There's so many youngsters out there who don't have anybody praying for them like that and who are trying to struggle it out on their own. And that's why I wanted to do this program today, to get you to offer some hope. This is a passion for you. You're out there speaking all over the place. You're revealing the darkest corner of your life, Michael, because you feel God wants you to.
You know, we started this talking about my dad and about him opening up his arms and me hugging him. Had I not gotten to the point of allowing God into my life and knowing that God loves me and knowing that I always love God, I was really pretending on the other side almost. Yeah. If I hadn't gone through that, I never would have said, and God never would have talked to me and said, you know, Michael, when was the last time you told your dad you loved him? So it all begets, and it's great. And to be able to talk to kids about relationships, and kids are going through this each and every day, and talk to families who are putting their kids in places where they're going to be affirmed either by parents or they're going to be affirmed by someone else. The someone else, who are they? I was affirmed by a man who was a pedophile who took advantage of me and ruined my childhood.
Did you ever blow the whistle on him?
Well, actually, I do mention his name on occasions on my radio show because you can't go back and arrest him now. But in 1987, 88, you couldn't go back and have anything done. And, of course, now the Supreme Court ruled that you couldn't file charges anymore. But I do work with the sex crimes unit, Bill Hodgman in Los Angeles, talking to him about child pornography, what it does, because that picture in itself scared me so much. So much. You know, I don't know if I ever shared this with you before. I know I shared it in my testimony. But if that photo would have come out when my dad was running for president, I actually talk about the fact that suicide might have been an option.
Even though you're 8 years old, for Pete's sake. 8 years old.
So afraid of that photo because, you know something, you never grow past eight. You're always 8 years old. Yeah. You always react as though you were 8 years old when this happens. And to finally get the release, at least to be able to talk about it and help other children go through it and families and people who are living through it today who have never dealt with it. And their families are broken up. Their relationships are broken up all because of what happened to them when they were 7, 8 years old.
Well, we're out of time for today. Michael, we've been talking to Michael Reagan, and let's talk a little more about how parents can protect their kids from the kind of abuse that you went through. And to offer some other advice to them. Would you be willing to do that?
Yes, I would.
Thank you for what you're doing, and I look forward to the next program.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. I hate to cut in here, but it is true we're out of time for today. We've been listening to the first part of a classic program between my dad, Dr. James Dobson, and Michael Reagan here on Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and if you or someone you know suffers from the trauma that comes from abuse, we are here to help in whatever way we can. We've got many articles on our website dealing with abuse, and we also have people on the phone that can help you find a counselor in your area. So please visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, or call us, 877-732-6825. We are here for you, and we want to help. We appreciate you listening, and don't miss the conclusion of our interview with Michael Reagan next time on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm James Dobson. And, you know, right now, many families are choosing to home educate their children. If you're one of them, I encourage you to consider attending a homeschool convention in your area. These events provide a great opportunity to learn more about home education and to enjoy fellowship with other like-minded families and just to gain confidence. I really believe homeschool conventions are very important to homeschool families. This year, I'll be speaking at the Teach Them Diligently convention in Nashville, Tennessee at the Gaylord Opryland Resort. And I'll be talking to several thousand homeschoolers on Saturday, March the 21st at 11 a.m. We're very supportive of this homeschool event because of their family discipleship and gospel focus. The whole event lasts 2.5 days from March 19th to the 21st. And the cost is very reasonable. It's just $70 per family. So I hope to see many of you in Nashville on March 21st at 11 a.m. at the Teach Them Diligently convention.
Hey, this is Dr. Meg Meeker calling all you pinners out there. Did you know that Family Talk has a Pinterest page? Well, it's true, and it's full of great resources, parenting tips, marriage advice, and good ideas for holiday crafts, recipes, and things to keep your family busy. follow our boards and be inspired. We are pinning and repinning new things every day from Pinterest users such as yourself. Connect with us at Pinterest.com/Dr. James Dobson. That's Pinterest.com/Dr. James Dobson. Join the platform that has over 9 million people engaging daily. Families from all over are coming to one common place to interact, receive advice, and learn some of the well-known tips that Dr. Dobson has to share. Family Talk's Facebook page is full of inspiration and helpful tips for your family. Don't miss out and join us today. Visit Facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. That's Facebook.com/Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.